Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call on this 17th of March, 2012. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next hour as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can always follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald, or certainly you can always go to my new website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com, or hit me up at Facebook.com/SurrealQuinn. The Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call poll question of the morning is, which team will go farther, Lehigh or Norfolk State? And certainly, that's where we begin on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call with the NCAA tournament. What a wild Friday of basketball. I mean, you know, Thursday, everything is ho-hum. The higher seeds go 14-2. Everything kind of, you know, goes according to plan. And then you get Friday and, you know, the game that kind of set the tone for that, I would say, was probably like early on the first game of the day. It was a close game. The Florida State game really gave you a sense, and Florida State almost got knocked out by a team that that would not have made the tournament had they not been in there, had they not won their conference tournament in St. Bonaventure's. That you got a sense that this could be one of these crazy days, but not nowhere near to the extent of what you saw out of what happened with the two 15 seeds taking out the number twos. And I'll get to the Duke Lehigh game for a second, because to me the Norfolk State Missouri game is one of the great upsets in the history of the tournament. You know, there were people out there who thought Missouri could win the national championship. At worst, go to the Final Four. I mean, I saw more people, as I look at my bracket, and I had Missouri going to the Elite Eight to lose Michigan State. But there were more people. I saw more people pick Missouri to go to the Final Four than Michigan State. And during the course of the season, you know, I thought that Missouri was as consistent of a college basketball team as there was during the course of the season. I thought the Big 12 was strong. I thought, you know, Missouri had like an 11-3 record against RPI top 50. And I'm going to tell you, Missouri, I mean, it didn't look like a fluke. I mean, it looked like Norfolk State. Norfolk State belonged on the same court as Missouri Tigers. It really didn't. I mean, like, they went toe-to-toe. We're not afraid of you. We're not scared of you. We're going to, we can handle, we can take, we can deal with your best. We're going to be here for 40 minutes. So, to me, that upset was as shocking as I've seen in a long time. And, you know, Missouri goes out there, again, give Norfolk State credit. They go out there, Missouri takes a lead, they maintain composure, the guy gets the three-point play, Kyle O'Quinn, who had a big game. And, you know, they're able to just hang on after losing the lead. You know, they had like a 5-6 point lead, they lose the lead briefly, and then regain that lead. A lot of times in those games, you see a team lose a lead, have a lead, lose it, and then they're not able to recover from that, and you know they end up losing the game. Norfolk State was able to recover from Missouri coming back and to regain control, regain the lead, and hold on. as a as a Missouri player, Presley attempted a game-winning three-point shot that would have won the game. Again, and these are the thing that I took from yesterday with the two 15 seeds. They did not look like 15 seeds. Neither one of them. It did not look like it was Duke, Missouri versus Lehigh and Norfolk State. Those games those games looked like 8-9 games. I mean, the teams looked just as athletic as talking about Lehigh and Duke. Lehigh looked every bit as athletic as Duke did, if not more. And again, that was a surprise. You know, the Duke Lehigh game was a surprise. I'm not gonna call it a shock, from a standpoint as Duke, because Duke was not playing well going into the tournament. Everybody knows what the Achilles heel is for Duke. They live and die by the 3-point shot, point blank. They live and die by the 3-point shot. If they're not making threes, then they can't. Then they can't win. I mean, they have a difficult time if they're not making threes. So that was Duke's Achilles heel going into the tournament. That was, dealing with teams with size that bothered them. So Duke, again, this was one of the weaker Duke teams that you'll see in terms of being a top two, top four seed. We know that this was not vintage Duke, not by any stretch of imagination. So, though, yes, was it a surprise? Absolutely. A shock? No. I don't think you can call it a shock, to be honest with you, even though it's a 15 seed. A historic day in college basketball. You have three seeds that were 13 or higher win. I just mentioned the two 15s, and then you had Ohio, the Bobcats, taking out Michigan, the number four seed. Again, Florida State almost lost to St. Bonaventure. They had to hold on for dear life. Overall, the lower seeds, the higher seeds were 8-8. 8-8 overall, a contrast to, again, the 14-2 on day one. One of the games that ended late, Xavier Notre Dame, certainly not a shock by any stretch with Xavier as a 10 seed taking out 7 seed, but Notre Dame did not get any help with the officials. Notre Dame is going to the line to attempt to tie the game down by two, and the official calls a lane violation. Again, one of the worst calls that I've ever seen in a big spot. You can't make that call if you're an official. They had to show about 20 million replays just to see if one of the kids had stepped in early. And you can't make that call. It has to be so obvious. To me, it would just have to be so obvious that it'd be like, how can you not make that call? You know, the Syracuse one, that was the obvious one. This one was like, show that again. Can you please show that again? It was an awful call. No, Xavier survives. Xavier survives to advance to the next round. But again, the big story is Norfolk State taking out Missouri. Norfolk State will play Florida, number 7 seed on Sunday. All of a sudden now, Michigan State's bracket has certainly opened up with that win, with that loss. Things have opened up for Marquette in the bottom half of the West bracket, and also again Kentucky, as if they need any more help, won't have to worry about Duke possibly in a regional final. I don't think Duke was getting there anyway, to be honest with you, but now they definitely won't have to worry about Duke, as Duke's the bottom half of that bracket certainly has opened up for the likes of Baylor, and especially for Baylor, because now you look at that bracket. You know, you have Notre Dame out, you have UNLV out, and Duke is out. So Baylor certainly is looking like a team that could possibly get to the Elite Eight with not having to deal with those two teams in that South bracket. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. When we return, we'll have some Saturday morning headlines. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 41 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. When you look at the first four teams that survived the opening couple of days of the tournament, Tuesday and Wednesday, only South Florida remains out of those teams. Western Kentucky, BYU have all been eliminated, along with this one other team that I'm leaving out here. Western Kentucky and Vermont. Vermont, of course, got knocked around by North Carolina. So only South Florida, who just manhandled my beloved Temple Owls yesterday, will advance to the third round and play. And they could be in the Sweet 16 because they'll play Ohio. So it could South Florida, you know, North Carolina. The bracket opens up North Carolina on that top half, not having to deal with a Temple or possibly a Michigan team from the Big Ten. From the Big Ten, the Big Ten always comes up small in these tournaments. I mean, let's be honest with you. Outside of Michigan State, the Big Ten does nothing in the NCAA tournament. It really don't. Like every year, you hear how deep the Big Ten is, and so on, how physical and how much teams are going to have to adjust to what they can do and what they can do and the size. And then the Big Ten goes out there and just lays an egg in the tournament year in and year out. Sports Illustrated had an article on how great the Big Ten is this year. Even the bottom half was capable of upsetting people at the top of the Big Ten. And I'm looking at the Big Ten, the Big Ten is the Big Ten. I mean, they still have some teams left. I mean, you still have Wisconsin, you still have Indiana, and I believe Purdue won yesterday. But again, we'll see come this next round. I get tired hearing about the Big Ten. I really do. We're gonna try to see if we can get the this chat line going on Blog Talk Radio for my Blog Talk Radio audience. So don't stay tuned for that over the course of the next segment or two. But we'll get to Saturday morning headlines. Peyton Manning was worked out by the San Francisco 49ers earlier this week. The 49ers kept it under wraps for the most part. It went down to Harbaugh. It went down to Duke. And, the workout, of course, was organized by Peyton Manning and David Cutcliffe, who was the current Duke head coach and also was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator back in the day at Tennessee, back in his days as a Tennessee Volunteer. Listen, it's come down to three teams now in terms of with Manning. Miami's out, Arizona's out. So you have Denver, Tennessee, and San Francisco. He worked out with Denver. He worked out with Denver yesterday. And of course, earlier this week worked out with San Francisco. He'll work out with Tennessee earlier coming up this week. To me, it's gonna come down to money, as it always does. You look at those three teams. Clearly, the 49ers are in the best shape as far as in terms of Super Bowl contender. That's without question. But both the Titans and the Broncos are prepared to offer Manning a 5-year, $90 million contract, which is what he was basically offered, what he was making before he was cut by Indianapolis. And my question would be, and this is why the 49ers are perceived to be the third team and the long shot out of that group, is are the 49ers going to commit that kind of money when they were one game away from the Super Bowl? I mean, do you want to commit that kind of money to Peyton Manning, when he could get, with the health risk, the neck, and, not just, I mean, they were impressed by, his workout and how he threw. But again, that, that's a lot of money. That is a major commitment. And he wants to be paid. He doesn't want to be paid like a health risk. He wants to be paid, again, like Peyton Manning, 2010. And I just don't think that the 49ers will, at the end of the day, it sounds great, but I don't think that they will commit that kind of money towards Peyton Manning. And I don't think Peyton Manning is walking away from that kind of money to go to a team just because the 49ers are the best, just because the 49ers would be the best option for him in terms of going to a Super Bowl or winning a Super Bowl. I don't see that happening either. Andy Pettitte has signed a 1-year minor league contract with the Yankees. If he makes the team out of spring, that contract will turn into $2.5 million. I would be shocked if he were not on the opening day roster for the 25-man roster come opening day. Again, man, Pettitte's 39 years old. You don't know how much he has left in the tank, to be honest with you. He did pitch well his final season with the Yankees. 11-3 with a 3.28 ERA. We had some health issues that kind of set him back the latter part of the year. And again, he's 39 years old. I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, you don't see many pitchers, starting pitchers, going that deep to late 30s and early 40s. I mean, the Jamie Moyers of the world are extremely few and far between. Most guys 39 years old, they're going to be are finished in their mid to late 30s. So I wonder how much he has left. Again, it does not hurt. $2.5 million is nothing to the Yankees. If he's great, then it's a bonus. If he doesn't do anything and can't pitch, then he'll go out. He'll go out proud, and nobody will get on him. But the Yankees will just move on and just eat the money or whatever and what have you. I don't think that this is a earth-shaking move that the Red Sox and Jeremy Devereaux should be quaking in their boots. But, again, you can never have enough pitching if you're the New York Yankees. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We do have the chat line up for my Blog Talk Radio audience, so I'm going to put the post-Saturday morning wake-up call poll question, which is which Cinderella will go further in the tournament, Norfolk State or Lehigh? Norfolk State will play Florida on Sunday. Lehigh will play Xavier. Either one of them can win those games, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't be surprised. I think one of them will advance to the Sweet 16. If I had to make me choose right now, I probably have to lean towards Lehigh, because I don't think Xavier is as good as Florida is. But either one of them could, both of them could make it. Without question. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 51 minutes after 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you to 12:30. As we'll be able to check out some action here coming up at 12 o'clock for the game. I would think that the game probably won't. Game probably won't start around 12:15. So we'll be on for about 15-20 minutes of this of the first game of the third round. It's not the second round anymore. The third round of the NCAA tournament, Syracuse, Kansas State. Don't be surprised if Syracuse goes down. Kansas State, again, coming out to Big 12. I still think the Big 12 is a strong conference, despite what happened to Missouri yesterday. Syracuse, again, did not look good in their first round game at all. Again, no Fab Melo, but even without Fab Melo, they just did not look good. So keep your eyes on that. You know, what you have learned in watching the NCAA tournament through the first couple of days, in particular Friday, is the gap between the second-tier teams and the mid-majors is razor thin. I mean, you have Kentucky, you have North Carolina. Once you get past that level of teams, Syracuse, when they were healthy, when you get past those level of teams, then it's like, everybody's like right there. The Baylor's, Dukes of the world, Kansas, those teams are ripe for the picking versus any of those mid-major teams. They really are. And I think that's going to be a recurring theme over the course of this NCAA tournament. We're going to get to some NBA here because it was a busy week in the National Basketball Association with the trades and the whole New York Knicks debacle. I'll get to the trade that, of course, the trade that did not happen in terms of Dwight Howard, with Dwight Howard. Listen, Orlando has an outside chance of winning the championship this year. I don't think they will, but they are third in the East. Okay, playing well, 29-16. I mean, they are the third best team in the East. Clearly, the third best team in the East. Will they? Can they beat Miami in a playoff series? Or Chicago in a playoff series? No, I don't think they can. But they are playing well. If they are tricking, if they are trying to fool themselves into thinking that Dwight Howard is going to sign the extension there, then they're insane. They're absolutely insane. I don't know what I like. To me, I believe that the Lakers would have did the Bynum Gasol or just Andrew Bynum deal. I believe that there were deals out there that they could have done. But to delay it another year and to put the franchise through this whole situation for another year makes no sense. Now, you want to say because it's money situation, because it's the money, you could be right. He puts seats, he puts fannies in the seats. There's no question. He is a draw. He is the face of that franchise. But I as a franchise, would not want to go through that this whole ordeal of him changing his mind every other second. Again, I'd rather just move on. We're trading you for this person, for whoever, and we're moving on without you. But apparently, they're going to wait. This is what they're banking on. And this is what is in the minds of the Magic Brass. One, they could possibly win a championship for this year. Two, he changes his mind and signs the extension. And three, that a better deal will occur, will somehow manifest over the next year. So those are the three things, and then and they're saying to themselves, hey, we'll trade him. If we can't do anything, then we'll trade him next February. So that is their line of thinking. So they're willing to deal with the millions of questions that are going to be asked between now and say next February when the trade deadline goes back to normal. So I mean, if they want to deal with that, then that's fine. I would have moved on, and and moved on with my franchise being and go, moved on with the franchise, moved on without him and go build towards the future. Because one thing's for sure, he is not signing a long-term extension, or he is not signing a new deal with the Orlando Magic. He's not. Speaking of the trades, I thought the Lakers did a good job in getting Ramon Sessions. They needed a point guard. The Jordan Hill thing was a salary dumping Derek Fisher's salaries. That was more about money than about Jordan Hill. Ramon Sessions is a very good point guard who came in averaging about 10 points, 5 assists. He's quick. He's athletic. He can score. He can have games where he can get you 15 or 20 points. They need it. And, you know, now you look at that backcourt. Look at that backcourt with him and Steve Blake. That's not a bad backcourt to have. You know, listen, they don't need you don't need a Chris Paul or Darren Williams to win a championship. You usually need somebody that can knock down open shots and that can defend. You need somebody that can defend quickness, whether it be Chris Paul, Westbrook, Derrick Rose, those type of guys. And the role just can't stop those guys, but at least he can make them work as a comparison to Derek Fisher, who would just, you know, Derek Fisher's 37 years old. I mean, it was, you know, his time was done. So I think that it was definitely the move to make if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, and certainly it was a move that they had to make if they wanted to increase their chances to get to the finals and possibly win a championship. Lakers are playing well right now. And Lakers are third in the West. I believe they're 28-16 or 29-16, one of those. Third in the West, leading their division. You know, Bynum has really stepped up since the All-Star break. Gasol's getting more touches. So things are starting to come together for the Lakers. As far as the Knicks go, also I did like San Antonio, what they did against Steven Jackson. I liked what the Wizards did in getting rid of two knuckleheads with JaVale McGee and Nick Young. Unfortunately, they were able to get rid of the third knucklehead. And that's, of course, Andre Bosch, but 2 out of 3 is not bad. And the Clippers getting Nick Young, to me, is a good move from the standpoint of you have a guy like Chris Paul who can set him, that can kind of put him in line, you know, when he goes out there and thinks he's, you know, Dwayne Wade. So, I mean, nothing big happened as far as the trades goes. I don't know what the plan is exactly for the New Jersey Nets. I don't get what they're doing. It was evident to me when Dwight Howard wasn't going to be traded that they should have went and moved Darren Williams, because he's not signed. He's going to opt out, unlike Dwight Howard. He's not and become a free agent, and the Nets are going to be stuck with nothing to show for. I mean, they basically ran him for a year and a half, and for what? I don't understand what they were trying to do. I don't think they have a plan. I'm trying to think of what exactly is their plan moving forward. And there is certainly a market for a 26-year-old point guard who was one of the best. I mean, he was Darren Williams was one of the top 15 players in the world, one of the top 3 or 4 point guards in the NBA. So don't tell me you couldn't move him and get nice pieces for him. You need to fire Billy King and find somebody else who can move him and get pieces for him. Also, you have with the Knicks, you know, we saw this coming a mile away once the Knicks started playing poorly that D'Antoni was going to be out. He really never had a chance to succeed in the situation. They forced Carmelo Anthony upon him in terms of that trade. They bring in Mike Woodson as basically a defensive coordinator, a guy, and, you know, like when you have a coach and you don't allow him to hire his own people, you really don't have a coach. You have a puppet. And that's what D'Antoni was. I mean, D'Antoni didn't want Carmelo Anthony. D'Antoni didn't want Mike Woodson. The pieces never fit. D'Antoni was never a fit for New York. This roster is not a fit in general. They should move Carmelo Anthony. They're not going to do it. I don't know what the next move is for the Knicks. Now, I understand they've won these first two games without D'Antoni by 42 and 15. But to me, that, you know, that's more, I think that's more fool's gold than what the team truly is. Mike Woodson is a decent coach. I mean, he has some good years in Atlanta. I don't know if he's the guy for them long term. This reeks of Phil Jackson. I mean, I think this is perfect for Phil Jackson to come in next year if he's physically able to do it. 15, 20 million a year, whatever. I mean, he could name his price and get this team and right their ship. The pieces are there. I think they have some nice pieces. The pieces are there. Even, you know, Kennedy, he might be the one guy that can, you know, help Carmelo become a better all-around player. But if not, move Carmelo and get two or three very good pieces that fit. But the talent's there for New York to make a run now in the future. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the coaching situation in place and, you know, figuring out, you know, what to do with some of their pieces, figuring out if some of those guys, if maybe they might need to move, and figuring out who's going to play. And I think, you know, think they might need to just shorten the rotation to 8 or 9. It's hard to play 10, 11 guys in the NBA. It's very hard, especially with the kind of star power that they have on their team. You can do it on a Denver, on a Philadelphia, or on an Indiana, because none of those teams have superstars or have perceived superstars. You can't play that many guys on a team with Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony. It's not going to work. They're not enough shots. And they have a bunch of guys that are scorers. Three four seven 215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about some NFL free agency, and we'll also continue our baseball preview as we look at the American League Central. That's coming up, and so much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to the bottom half of the hour as we talk a ton of NCAA tournament, also some NBA and NFL, and that's what we're going to go to now is the NFL is where busy week with the free agency and the Peyton Manning ordeal. Some curious free agent signings and contracts given out. Number one, the Calvin Johnson contract is insane to me. I'm sorry, I'm not giving a receiver $60 million in guaranteed money. Now, forget about the $132 million. That's money that he will never see. You know, I mean, a lot of that money is backloaded. You know, there's maneuvering that these contracts, And I think ProFootballTalk.com had a perfect breakdown of his contract and how much money he probably will, more like he will actually see. $60 million guarantee is like, for a wide receiver, I'm just like, no. I'm sorry. I'm not, like, you're not getting, he's a receiver. He's a receiver. And he's a great one. Right now, he will, I would venture to say that he will be the number one receiver in all the fantasy leagues next year. I think that's a safe bet. But he's not six. Think about it. What is Drew Brees going to get in guaranteed money? You get Calvin Johnson $60 million. If I'm Drew Brees, I'm Drew Brees' agent right now. I am licking my chops right now. You gonna give him $60 million? How many playoff games has he won? And this is hard. You don't gauge a receiver versus a quarterback. But my point is, quarterbacks are the highest paid players. The great ones are the highest paid players in the NFL. They get the highest franchise tags for a reason. And you don't give a wide receiver, though I understand this is a passing league now. You don't give a wide receiver $60 million in guaranteed money. Mario Williams getting $50 million in guaranteed money, despite his injury, some of his injury issues that he's had, makes more sense than Calvin Johnson, because Mario Williams can impact the game with the way the game is played now. Mario Williams can impact the game as much, if not probably even more, than Calvin Johnson with his ability to get to the quarterback. And the fact that he is a premier pass rusher. And I thought that was too much for Mario Williams. So you see Tampa Bay try to reload. I like the Knicks, send them sign call. Knicks, number one, they get one of the best guards in football. Number two, they weaken a division opponent in the New Orleans Saints. So that serves they kill two birds with one stone with that. Vince Jackson, it depends on which Vince Jackson shows up. He was one of the most enigmatic receivers in the 2011 season. I mean, you go out and get 8 for 140. Next game, he's 2 for 35. So we'll see which Vince Jackson shows up. Certainly, Josh Freeman would love that. Love to have him as a weapon. Redskins try to address a couple of their issues in terms of receivers with Pierre Garçon, Josh Wilson, Josh Morgan. The Josh Morgan one is kind of a head scratcher for me. Pierre Garçon, a guy that can get down the field. Again, Josh Morgan's coming off an injury, so we'll see how that works out with that. But again, the main thing to me is, some of these contracts. It never fails. These owners overpay these guys with these signing bonuses and free agency. And the thing about free agency is, you never hear about the Packers. You never hear about the truly great franchises in the NFL, Super Bowl contenders, going too crazy in free agency. That's because they've done their homework, drafted, and they make small moves. The New Englands of the world, the Pittsburghs of the world. They put themselves, Green Bay Packers, they put themselves in a position where they don't have to go after these big-time, big-money free agents. And even Houston, they make smaller moves. They make calculated moves. So this is where you don't want to be in a situation where you have to give a guy $50 million in guaranteed money or $40 million in guaranteed money. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will talk some baseball. We'll continue our 2012 preview as we look ahead towards the American League Central in a division that should go down to the wire. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. 12 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour in this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Syracuse, Kansas State about to tip off in a couple minutes here as they will kick off the third round of the NCAA tournament. And these 2 days are the best 2 days to me of the tournament in terms of Saturday and Sunday, because now you've gotten teams who had no business in the tournament. You've gotten, no, I shouldn't say that, who really are not that good. You've gotten them out of the way. I mean, you've gotten them out of the way. Now the teams that are, these remaining 32 teams are, you know, can win a championship, can get to a Final Four, can get to a Sweet 16. You know, a lot of those teams are in the first round. Those teams are, you know, playing games that play this way in or snuck in to winning their conference tournament. They're just not good enough. They're just happy to be in the tournament. But now that you have some good matchups in terms of 4 versus 5, 3 versus 6, we'll talk more about that. But these two days, Saturday and Sunday, should be exciting. Will be an exciting time, certainly, for college basketball fans. We're going to shift here to talk some baseball as we look at, continue our preview, our baseball preview of our 2012 baseball preview season. Of course, starts April 5th, not that far away. AL Central, to me, team to beat, the Detroit Tigers, easily. And are heads and shoulders above any of these teams in this division. I would be shocked, and I mean shocked, if Detroit does not win this division. You look at their lineup, talking about with Fielder, Cabrera, you know, Austin Jackson at the top, you know, Delmon Young. And then, you know, when you go, you know, Delmon Young, Brandon Inge, certainly they have some defensive questions trying to, you know, when you have Fielder at first, Cabrera at third, that, you know, the Cabrera at third thing will be something that people will be watching for the entire season. Last time he played third base, he struggled. You know, if he can't play third and you have to DH him, can he survive? Can he strive being a, you know, not everyday DH, but DH him more times than not? You know, you love their pitching staff as far as, you know, at the top, they had best pitcher in baseball right now, and Justin Verlander, who won the Cy Young and also the MVP award. You know, Doug Fister, Max Scherzer, Rich Porcello, you know, round out their top four. They're strong. With the top three are very good as a duo. And you really, listen, to ask for 4 or 5 quality stars is not realistic in baseball in this day and time. This is not that. There's some talented young pitching out there, but it's too spread out in terms of trying to stack your pitching staff. If you have 3 guys that you can trust in a starting pitching staff, and you know you mix and match those other 2 guys, you get those back end guys, 4 or 5 guys, want them to eat innings and save your bullpen and be basically around 500. But you get those 3, you get 3 guys, and they a lot of people believe that Fister and Scherzer in particular can be a 15 to 18 game winner. You know what you're getting out of Verlander. You're going to get, you know, close to 18 to 20 wins. Fister will be the wild card in terms of that group. Can he continue where he left off before he was traded? After he was traded to Detroit, their bullpen is very good with Valverde, Benoit. I told you they got it picked up. I told you Dotel. They will get Albuquerque back in July. So that would be like an additional free agent, or that would be like making a trade without giving up something, getting him back around the All-Star break. Again, I think Detroit is clearly a team to beat in this division. This is a division that is in transition. This is a division that features some, you know, a lot of youth in this division, but Detroit stands heads and shoulders to me above everybody else. Next in line, I would say the Cleveland Indians. People forget, last year Cleveland Indians were 80-82 despite losing about, I think, more people to the disabled list in terms of games lost to the disabled list than any team in the American League. They returned those people back. They were 30. Remember, they started off the season, they were 30-15 and had the best record in baseball, definitely the American League. You know, you get Carlos Santana back. you get Carlos Santana back. They have, I feel like, a strong pitching staff, starting in particular that bullpen. They have one of the best bullpens in all of baseball with Perez, Joe Smith. Pastano is going to start out the year closing because Chris Perez has some injury issues, but it's nothing serious. Their question is, again, I like their pitching staff, especially their starting pitching staff with Matheson, Albardo Jimenez at the top. Derek Lowe can eat some innings. The question will be what happens with the pitcher formerly known as Fausto Carmona. His name is now Roberto Hernandez. He eventually would join them. You know, he went through the whole name change, where he concealed his identity. Can he bounce back from that? I mean, he does not have to be the Fausto Carmona from 2007, but if he can get out there, eat up some innings, and give them another reliable starter, that will make their staff even that much stronger. Again, offensively, it's always the question with them. They did not score a lot of runs last year, but, you know, they have a decent offense with Cabrera, Asdrubal Cabrera, who was an all-star last year. Sin Chu, as I butcher his name, is a good player when healthy. Michael Bradley has a chance to be a pretty good player. Offensively, they're decent. The question is, you know, can you get anything out of Hafner and Sizemore? And to me, at this point, with all the injuries and with the age, I think anything you get out of them is a bonus. I really do. I wouldn't try. I mean, especially from Sizemore. I mean, Hafner might can get you 15, 20 home runs, 75 to 80 RBIs. At this point in his career, is what you're going to have to accept. But, I mean, can Grady Sizemore stay on the field? I don't think he can. I mean, he already will start the season on the disabled list. I don't know how long he'll be on there, but he'll start off he's not expected to start opening day. I think they're going to have a very good season. I think I trust them in terms of looking. When you get past Detroit, I'll probably trust them more than any other team in this division, considering what they did, what they were able to do last year before all the injuries started catching up with them. So, again, I love their bullpen. I love their bullpen from top to bottom. That will win a lot of games for them, but they have to get something. They have to score some runs so that every game is not, 3-2, 2-1. I trust what they're trying to do. Like, to me, they have a plan. They're going to play their young talent. And you know what you're going to get from them. Masterson had pitched very well last year, despite the fact that he didn't have a gaudy record. His ERA was 3.21. The question to me to their team is Albarda Jimenez. Albarda Jimenez, about a year and a half ago, people were calling the best pitcher in baseball. But he's had some injury issues. He's had some confidence issues. If he can get back to anywhere near where he was at, that, they will challenge the Tigers for that division. That's how good of a pitcher he is or was, a couple years ago. My wild card team, the Minnesota Twins. Minnesota Twins last year were horrible, 63-99. They have a chance to be one of those teams that can go in either direction. Either they can sneak up and possibly challenge for the division, or they can finish in last place. It's all going to depend on the two M&M boys, Mauer and Morneau. Last year, those two combined for 7 home runs. They're going to have to combine for about, 50 this year. Again, Morneau and Sidney Crosby should have a conversation, because they've had just the strangest and just most, mind-baffling concussions that I've ever seen. I don't know what had, these concussions just will not, the symptoms of concussions will not go away. And they are the longest running concussions ever. I've never seen anything like it. You can get those guys back healthy and on the field for at least 140 to 150 games. That takes Minnesota to another level. Because I'm not in love with the pitching at all. I mean, Pavano's their most reliable starter. Francisco Liriano's their most talented starter. Everybody else, you're just hoping they do. You're hoping that they're not just awful. I mean, Scott Baker, Jason Marquis, Nick Blackburn, that starting staff doesn't scare anybody. And their bullpen to me is a major question. Matt Capps is decent. Is decent at best. They have some decent setup people. But the Twins on paper, the Twins don't look that good on paper, to be honest with you. But I'm thinking that this is a year where Mauer and Morneau possibly get back to what they once were. Both of them are former MVPs. Remember that. So we'll see what happens with the Twins this year. My team on the rise, I like the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that despite, I think every year, again, so it's amazing. We say this almost every year. I mean, let's be honest. Kansas City young has a lot of young talent, nice pieces, good farm system, and then they go out there and, you know, lose 95 to 100 games. I'm saying that this will be the year where the Kansas City Chiefs will challenge for in that division and possibly for a wild card spot. I like their lineup a lot. The last year they were fourth in the American League in run score. You know, when you got Brett, you know, Brett Butler is one of the most underrated players in baseball. They have some, you have a, and just lost my, had to this guy's name on top of my tongue. You have a Jeff Francoeur who had a decent year last year. They have good offensive pieces. I mean, they have some nice offensive pieces. Alex Gordon, who may be coming into his own and, is ready, and might be ready to be an all-star caliber player. Question for them, again, to me, is their starting pitching, which is a question for most of these teams. Luke Kowitzer, Bruce Chan, I mean, Felipe Paulino, the guy that, you know, they picked up Jonathan Sanchez, he is the key to their pitching staff as far as I'm concerned. He is absolutely the key to their pitching staff. Can Jonathan Sanchez, you know, be a guy that doesn't walk the ballpark? He has great stuff, left-handed. If he can go out there and get you know, 13 to 15 wins, eat up some innings, that can take Kansas City. That can have Kansas City making possibly Detroit and Cleveland a little nervous in that division. The bullpen is very good. They have a, you know, really only, I mean, the bullpen at the top is good. Soria, they brought in Jonathan Broxton. I don't know where Broxton's head at is right now, to be honest with you. Is he a Jonathan Broxton, you know, before the Matt Stairs home run or after the Matt Stairs home run? Because really, he has not been the same pitcher since that Matt Stairs home run back in, I believe it was 2009, when the Phillies beat the Dodgers in that series. You know, if you're not knowing, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it was a playoff, the NLCS back in 2009, Phillies Dodgers. Stairs was up in a big spot against Broxton and hit a ball that might still be traveling. I mean, he hit a moonshot at Dodger Stadium. And again, after that, and we've seen it before. We saw it with Brad Lives, Albert Pujols. These guys, it's hard for them to recover from the mom and home runs, especially at critical moments. And again, and Broxton has had some injury issues. We'll see. If you can get anything out of Broxton and you can use him to set up Soria, that's a pretty nice combination as your seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guys, or 8-9 guys. You can really shorten the game with that particular combination. And the team that will be looking up at everybody, I think Chicago White Sox. Like, I'm looking at this roster, looking at their pitching, I just don't see it. I think the White Sox are in clear transition. Their lineup, you know, Paul Kornhauer is the only good player, basically is a very good player. Gordon Beckham is decent. Their lineup is not very good. Top to bottom is not very good. Their pitching staff wouldn't scare me at all with even Gavin Floyd and Danks. They're just not there. To me, they are a mediocre baseball team, to be honest with you. They are absolutely mediocre. and they are a team that I think they, I think it's going to be a long year for the White Sox. I think this is going to be a long year, and I'm picking them to finish last in that division. So there you go with the American League Central. Next week, we will focus on the National League West, where the Giants look to return to another, have another return trip to the Fall Classic. We'll talk about that next week. When we return, we will wrap up the program. This is the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. We'll be right back. Shoot well from 3-point range, but Lehigh's, you know, defensively just bothered them. So again, great night at college basketball. I mean, great day at college basketball in terms of Florida, in terms of Florida State almost losing to St. Bonaventure. You had an exciting game with Notre Dame. And Xavier, terrible call on the official, terrible call by the officials with the lane violation, with Notre Dame being down by two. That didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Bad, tough break for Notre Dame. You had Ohio upsetting Michigan. Again, Big Ten. I don't want to hear anything about the Big Ten. I think it's year in year out overrated. So they take a hard fall with that ordeal. Today's action. Again, Syracuse, Kansas State are tied at 11 right now. A couple of games I'm looking forward to. Number one, VCU versus Indiana. VCU is 7-3 since the 2007 NCAA tournament. They went to the Final Four last year. 2007, they beat Duke when I believe Eric Maynard was on that particular team before he went to the NBA. You know, VCU is going to turn into one of those, a mini Gonzaga here. Well, even better, because Gonzaga never made it to the Final Four. So, I mean, VCU's turned to one of these teams where you have to pay attention to year in and year out. And they are extremely well coached. I mean, Shaka Smart is tremendous. I mean, he really is. His teams play hard. They play smart. They are great defensively. A lot of people don't believe they're as talented as they were last year, but they look... But collectively, and they might even be better as far as how they play together. And you know, Smart was making some good points. Like last year, you know, we weren't even supposed to be in the tournament. I mean, a lot of people were saying our resume wasn't getting good enough. We were one of the first four. This year, we won our conference tournament. So this year, we come in before the tournament. We've actually accomplished more and been a much better looking team this year than we were last year. Thought that was a very fair and valid point by Shaka Smart. I'll be looking forward to the Murray State Marquette game. A lot of people thought that if Missouri was not going to get to the Final Four, it would be because of Marquette picking them off, and thought that Marquette could be certainly a more dangerous team in this tournament with their guards, with their athleticism. So keep your eyes on that. Murray State obviously has a chance to prove themselves that they're better than a sixth seed, despite winning as many games as they won. So, we'll see. We'll see about that before the game, certainly before the day is over again. You're going to have wall-to-wall basketball from now until basically midnight. And tomorrow you'll have some games. Tomorrow we will know who will be in the Sweet 16 come next week. That's going to wrap up the program. I hope you enjoy your evening. Enjoy your college basketball. Enjoy your day. I will see you next week on the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.